Welcome to Reflection Time, the program that looks at world events and everyday issues through the eyes of the scriptures, and as well shares with you some inspirational music. Welcome to Reflection Time. This is your host, Paul Weber. But in the first half hour, we'll be finishing our three-part series with our interview with Lincoln Steed of Liberty Magazine. Welcome back to our program again
today,
Lincoln. For those of you who might not have been tuned into the program last week, or for the last couple weeks, we've been talking basically about religious liberty, how it came about, and how it existed through the years, and where we are with religious liberty right now, and how it's being played out in the political sphere within not only the United States, but in Canada and around the world, because there are several issues that are at the forefront right now. And in this program today, we want to discuss some of those issues. And I guess we could start out by just perhaps bringing one of these issues to light, Lincoln. And I think one that has been in the news much in the past recent time, in the past few years, is the issue of creation and evolution, the debate that's taking place with regards to not only the subject itself, but how it plays out in the school system.
Yeah, well, I'm sure most of our listeners will be aware that ever since the theory of evolution burst on the Western scene, there's been considerable debate, and many people of faith objected to it. A lifetime ago in the United States, there was the famous Scopes trial, where a teacher was actually set up by opponents of evolution to teach in the school and challenge the question of evolution and creationism, and it was rather an inconclusive result. But ever since then, there's been an uneasy relationship between creationism and evolution in the schools. But because of the separation of church and state, evolution has won out in a de facto sense, because it's the ascendant scientific theory. Well, with the rise of the Christian right in America and their coming to power, they've decided to challenge this. And I believe that somewhat after the fact, because of that rise to power, a new view of creationism has been put up that is designed to counter evolution. It's called intelligent design. Now, it's not a new view, because when evolution first came, some Christians sort of fell back on the idea of, well, there's a designer behind this all, and he's still there, even if we see evidence of evolutionary process after the fact. But intelligent design seems designed to disarm the evolutionary claim to power. In reality, evolution doesn't try very well to describe the absolute origin of everything from nothing. Mm-hmm. It's really describing the development of all that we have now from the most basic initial form of life. How that came about, evolution is not competent to even describe. Mm-hmm. But it's based on the premise of just natural forces, and doesn't put the divine into the system. Christians, Bible-believing Christians, see there in the Bible a very definitive record of God's creative power at work in 6 days of creation, followed by a day of rest. That's rather unambiguous in the Bible. But intelligent design, I think, is dangerous from a Bible-believing Christian point of view, because it's willing to put forward the premise that there's evidence of a designer, capital D, but we don't say God, or we don't say that this is any Bible text to support it. But, you know, wink, wink, we all know that we're talking about the God of the Bible. So a designer laid out the templates, established life and got it on its way, and then it follows through evolutionary patterns into the present divergence. Clearly, it's an attempt, I believe, to get the foot in the door for religious instruction in the schools.
Mm-hmm.
This is all my interpretation of it, but it's being posited as a faith view versus a secular view, and that secular science is not only false, but it's restrictive for religious expression by not allowing this new intelligent design scientific theory to be taught alongside of it. But it doesn't take much reading to see that intelligent design is really going under false colors. It's neither really science nor truly the biblical account.
It's a watered-down version of both.
Yeah. As a Seventh-day Adventist Christian, where I believe there's a danger, apart from the state issue, from a truth issue, there's a danger that if it's accepted, it directly argues against the literal creation days, and therefore the Sabbath as a day rest mandated following those 6 days of creation. Because intelligent design does not speak to days of creation. It just speaks to a basic origin of life from a designer, and then you're still dealing with long periods of time. Rather than perhaps millions or billions, it's putting tens or hundreds of thousands of years, but it's removed from biblical truth. But it's a wedge issue, and that's how it's functioning in the U.S., and there's been some court cases already. There's contentious issues with the school board in Dover, school board where they tried to force it through. We're going to see a lot more cases, and I believe it will go to the Supreme Court. And under the current makeup of the Supreme Court, they may well require that it be taught. To me, the issue is several levels, like I've explained, whether it's acting as a wedge issue. But there's no question in science studies in the U.S. and probably most of the Western world, a secular religion, in essence, as formulated by evolution, has been allowed to exclude all other world views. And it should be allowed, and in fact it should be explained in government-sponsored science classes that there are alternate views of origin. But as far as intelligent choice, I think that logically belongs more in a study of religion or religious philosophy. So there's an issue of prejudice that's being uncovered by this battle, a prejudice against religion, but there's a separation of church and state issue that needs to be adhered to, and it is not right to allow the state to include intelligent choice as a supposed scientific explanation when it is nothing but a religious explanation.
So it's a contentious issue in that
very
basis.
Contentious, and there's a lot represented by this. But it's important to know on the face of it what intelligent choice really, intelligent design really is.
Mm-hmm.
It is a false view of the biblical story, and it's just a wedge issue, and it's going under false colors, I believe, to disarm the scientific view that itself is prejudicial.
Mm. So. How does that First Amendment come into play in that issue? You know, we have this issue obviously before us, and you've alluded to that, but based on the First Amendment, How can
separation
that help
to, of church and state? Yeah.
Yeah, and or how can people use this issue to say that church and state is a dinosaur here? You know,
well, at the moment, as I think I said in an earlier session, many religious people in America, and particularly now, the two most recent judges on the Supreme Court, believe that separation of church and state has gone too far, that it is now actively excluding religion from public life. Well, you know, that's a very subjective judgment. Mm-hmm. But in response, they consciously want to push back and use the power of government to support religion. Mm-hmm. And they're appealing to a mythical view of a Christian America. You know, it's not just intelligent design, but it's prayer in schools and other issues like that that have been debated for some time. And the way to understand it is the First Amendment says that Congress shall make no law establishing religion nor prevent the free exercise. And the way to understand it is by that law and by Supreme Court endorsement, as a Christian or a person of any religious faith, you're free in a school or a public environment to express it. The student can express their faith. Mm-hmm. And it's often said they can't, and on occasions they've been restricted, but when they've been restricted, the Supreme Court has upheld it. So, say in a classroom, a young student should be free to write a paper about their religious faith or about some biblical truth. They should be free to make comments in the class. What should not be allowed is for the teacher to require religious activity, for the school to organize and orchestrate and require prayer and other religious activity. You don't want the state in charge of it, but the state should not and cannot restrict the spontaneous expression of people's religion, even in the context of state activity.
Mm, okay.
The Clinton administration, who probably were far more secular than this present one, still came out with a white paper book, I remember at the height of the argument, about 32-page or so booklet explaining the rights of religious expression in schools and public places, and they're quite extreme. What muddies the issue is that while the separation of church and state was intended and reasonably upheld in many regards, there's no question that in previous generations, particularly around World War, just after World War II, at the beginning of the Cold War, there was significant public prayer in public schools and religious activity that went unchallenged, because this was an era when the U.S. was trying to project itself as a Christian nation as opposed to godless communism. That's also when the words in the Pledge of Allegiance, one nation under God, they were added then. Mm-hmm. To what was still a fairly recent pledge, but they were added very consciously in the 50s at the behest of the Knights of Columbus, because they wanted America to project itself as a religious nation. And you could argue, it's easy to argue, that that was improper for them to add at that time. Mm-hmm. And the Supreme Court has been very clear. It's improper for the state to require a young person to say these things.
Yeah. Now, I recently, or some time ago, read a quote about religious liberty, and it ties into the subjects. And it was talking about the First Amendment, and just tell me if you would agree with this or not. It says the First Amendment was not necessary to protect people from religion, but to protect religion from the tyranny of the law.
Well, that's one side of it. It works two ways, yes. And that is true. The First Amendment. Well, remember, there's two sides of it, though.
Mm-hmm.
The tyranny of the law would be the establishment.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You don't want the state to establish religion, but you want people to be free to exercise whatever faith or lack of faith. One of the exhibit A's of the intention of the U.S. was when they went to war very early on. Under President Washington and concluding with Adams, went to war with the Barbary pirates just off the coast of Libya. So mm-hmm. the U.S. has had Middle Eastern wars from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Treaty of Tripoli, they said the United States, and this was negotiated through two presidents and endorsed by Congress, it says the United States is in no fashion founded upon the Christian religion. Mm-hmm. So they were distancing the state from religious affiliation.
Mm-hmm. Keeping, yeah, the
separation.
And
there's safety in that. Mm-hmm. There's danger in the society becoming irreligious.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where the Christian right in America, I think, have lost their way. There's a great need for what I've been with groups of them where they meet and worry about what's happening. There's a great need as they pray, and I've heard them pray many times, that God will heal this nation.
Mm-hmm.
Of course you want spiritual reawakening to come upon a population as a whole and to turn away from, mm-hmm. you know, the immorality of Hollywood and all the rest. It's all very
mm-hmm.
true.
Mm-hmm.
But the state can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a work between the individual and God, and it can be encouraged through church activity and church outreach, but mm-hmm. it can be stultified and misdirected through the state taking upon itself.
Yeah. I've often, in that same context, heard people use, you know, the quote from Isaiah, you know, the repairer of the breach.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, misquoting that, really, in regards to using that as a basis as to how government should enforce you know, a turnaround in beliefs yeah. and fundamentals and morals.
But there's no question that even with good intentions, I think the U.S. or any country would be hard-pressed to remain neutral because this wild card of, in particular, of Islamic fundamentalism is pushing against Western values. And what I've seen ever since the collapse of the Soviet Union is not only the loss of innocence, if you like, in isms,
mm-hmm.
Grand social theories, but there's the breakdown of the nation state, and I don't see too many countries now that worship national identity in the nationalistic sense. National identity more and more is defined by two things, and usually the second. Either ethnicity or religion.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when there's religious identity and then conflicts between countries and peoples, you've mm-hmm. got some serious stuff because we know the religious wars and ethnic wars are the most vicious. The old mm-hmm. style wars of the imperialist era for control of territory or control of resources, they have an end.
Mm-hmm.
You gain your objective and the war ends.
Mm.
But where does it end on belief?
Mm-hmm.
You're dealing with absolute evil, as President Bush says, you're mm-hmm. with us or you're against us,
yeah.
you're either good or you're evil. You're an mm-hmm. axis of evil if you're opposed to us.
Yeah.
And until you embrace the new faith, there can really be no end to that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's always perpetuating itself.
And mm-hmm. when people feel they're fighting against evil, they can perpetrate themselves the most evil acts because they're justified, God is with them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As we see by the, you know, flying into the towers, and as a radical Islamist I met on a plane once said, when I questioned this, he says, "How else can we get at America? You know, why shouldn't we do such things?"
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
Eye-opening. I made reference there a couple minutes ago with regards to the Oath of Allegiance, you know, one nation under God.
Yeah, the Pledge of Allegiance.
The Pledge of Allegiance. In a recent article in the Liberty magazine, I believe it was this past issue, there was a subject here entitled "By What Authority?" And in the article, it talks about the using the words under God in the Pledge of Allegiance. And there's a comment that says it has very little to do with atheism; it has a great to do with authoritarianism. And in later on in the article, it talks about it equates the French the French and the American revolutions, and two of them had a very stark stark contrast in the outcomes.
Mm-hmm.
And it says they were waged on precisely the same declared rights of liberty and equality. One was a ghastly failure and ended in a reign of terror. The other, a magnificent success. Why? How would you tie that together? How do you?
Well, there's no question that they were fueled by some of the same philosophical concepts, and some of the same figures were common to both. Most Americans don't know that Thomas Jefferson was 100% supportive of the French Revolution, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And he even made a comment that the Tree of Liberty needs a little blood of revolution mm-hmm. now and then to water it. So he wasn't mm-hmm. even fazed by the Reign of Terror in France. But I think the distinction is that in France they had suffered under the abuses of Roman Catholicism. And so it meant when they threw off the old order, which had cast in its lot with the church, there was a violently anti-religious sentiment unleashed that exists to this day in France.
The pendulum went too far the other way.
Right. It wasn't a religious issue in the US, and if anything, their religion, religious view informed their views of statehood and you know, the Protestant views that I referred to earlier, that really colored how they formulated this new state, even though the sentiments that created it were enlightenment and deistic, not really mainline religious views. Once the revolution started, it was carried forward on Protestant views of responsibility and of the state versus man rather than joining them together. But there's interesting parallels. Something that I throw in that very few people seem to remember or know about, you're mentioning the French Revolution shortly after the American Revolution, but a bare lifetime before the American Revolution, England had a civil war, a religious civil war.
I wasn't aware of that, actually.
Charles I, with Catholic sympathies, a Catholic wife, and fooling with the Common Book of Prayer, incited mostly Protestant dissenters to rise up in rebellion. There were debates in Parliament at the same time, but it quickly morphed into a religious war of independent Puritans and other factions taking to the field of battle against the king, and they beat him, they took him prisoner, they executed him, which way preceded the French Revolution and shocked Europe and established Oliver Cromwell, I'm sure you know of him, as a religious dictator. And to me, it's very interesting that many of those same religious dissenters who had, in the aftermath of the reestablishing of the monarchy when Cromwell died, had fled to America, they would have, you would think, thought, had the same intention of a religious dictatorship in America. But I believe they had seen the error of their ways. And they still had rather extreme views, but they were not inclined to formulate them into a public policy. But I think there's more to be spoken of in, you know, explaining America from the religious civil war of England than the French Revolution.
Interesting. It just seems that through the First Amendment, it provides a balance. Here we see different various revolutions, the one referred to in England, where you go too far onto the side of religion, but then the French Revolution went too far into what they term like the Age of Reason, you know, human wisdom or reason as their guidepost. So it just seems that, you know, there's a divine inspiration through the First Amendment that sort of balanced out the approach.
Yes, I believe. I think it's a legitimate way to look at history and U.S. history, to see providence working through, not God, you know, projecting his views on the country, but God worked providentially as people were sensitive to his principles to bring about a tolerant and a you know, generally admirable state. It could have turned out very differently, and it's already in the process of shifting. It's a miracle of history, I think, that it's lasted so long. Not without hiccups along the way, though, that's for sure.
Yeah. Too often we forget the lessons of history.
You know, history doesn't repeat itself, but the patterns of history, because they're patterns of human behavior, very similar.
Yeah. Well, our time is running short. Any final, you know, closing comments you want to share?
Well, just for people to get hold of Liberty Magazine, if they can, you can find us on the internet at libertymagazine.org. Liberty goes out to 200,000 readers every issue, starting with the President of the United States, senators, congressmen, judiciary, lawyers, and as we like to say, thinking people. Wherever, who want to know what's happening in the religious liberty front from a constitutional, historic, and a philosophical and religious level.
Yeah. Well, I thank you very much for spending
this
time.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Enjoy discussing with you.
And who knows, we may get the opportunity to talk to you again in the future. And we are glad you've taken the time to spend with us.
Thank you.
And for those listeners who would like to find out any more information about this subject or would like to share any comments or questions with us, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. We'd be glad to share with you a Liberty Magazine if you write into us. And this brings to an end our program for today. We hope you've enjoyed the presentation. If you have any comments or questions, you can reach us at radioreflection@yahoo.ca. That's radioreflection@yahoo.ca. Remember this week to take time to reflect on God's Word, and whatsoever things are true, whatsoever things are honest, whatsoever things are just, whatsoever things are pure, and whatsoever things are lovely, whatsoever things are of good report, if there be any virtue, and if there be any praise, think on these things.